Derek and Romaine present 10 Years Later, The Laramie Project, The Lasting Legacy of Matthew Shepard on Sirius OutQ 109.
In October of 1998, a young gay man, University of Wyoming student, named Matthew Shepard, was brutally attacked in Laramie, Wyoming. 5 days later, he died from injuries he sustained during what would become one of the most reported hate crimes in our nation's history. In the days following Matthew's death, playwright Moises Kaufman and members of the Tectonic Theater Company traveled to Laramie, Wyoming, and spent a year gathering over 200 interviews with various townspeople in what would ultimately become the Laramie Project, one of the most produced theatrical pieces in the country and around the world. I'm Barbara Walters. I'm proud to introduce this Sirius OutQ special, conceived by our own Romaine Patterson, a childhood friend of Matthew Shepard.
The following are recordings that feature various people who were interviewed about their experiences with the Laramie Project. Some of the people were actors, others were producers, some were involved with school productions, community productions, and even the original production. But they all have one thing in common. They were to be forever affected. This is the story of a theater company's trip to Laramie, Wyoming, and what came out of it. Moises Kaufman, founder of Tectonic Theater Company.
The idea to go to Laramie came about because as soon as Matthew was attacked on October 6th, we heard about it right away in New York, and I think we heard about it all over the country.
Police say Shepard was lured from this Laramie night spot. He was later robbed, beaten, and left for dead, tied to this fence post outside of town.
And for the next 4 or 5 days, we kept praying that Matthew would survive and that he would be okay. But during that time, the thing that really grabbed my attention was how much press this whole incident was getting. How much you couldn't turn on the television, you couldn't look at a newspaper or turn on the radio without hearing about Matthew Shepard. And as you know, there's over 1,000 hate crimes a year that are reported. That knows there's a few other hundred that are not reported. But for some reason, this one resonated. This crime became one where we as a nation took notice. And so my idea was I wanted to go to Laramie to talk to the people of the town to see how the town would respond to this crime. And the idea was that perhaps in the words of the people of Laramie, we could discover something about where the whole country was at as a nation.
I had just gone to the political rally for Matthew here in the city.
Tectonic Theater Company member Lee Fondakowski.
I was sort of up in the front when the police horses came and the riot police were there pushing back the crowds. So I witnessed a lot of chaos and I was pretty upset by it. It wasn't my first thought, but I was really struck by a sense of a vulnerability as a gay person that wasn't particular to Laramie, just in general feeling an awakened sense of vulnerability after this happened. But Greg and I went to Laramie ahead of people. We first went to Denver, and that's where we first met Romaine. And then we went to Laramie to kind of scope it out, check out our hotel, make sure that everything was okay before the rest of the company came. As we were rolling into Laramie, we were kind of joking and, you know, had some jet lag. But when we got into the center of town, we realized, like, here we are, two queers rolling into Laramie where this brutal hate crime has just taken place. And all of the laughter that was in the car kind of fell away, and we just got very, very quiet and actually just pulled over the car and just kind of sat with the reality of where we were. So it didn't sink in until we were literally in the main street of town.
Tectonic Theater Company member Greg Perotti.
I was frightened, and Lee Fondakowski and I went out ahead of the rest of the company. We were by ourselves. And I remember driving into Laramie and being quite scared.
I think when we first decided to go to Laramie, there was some trepidation. After all, we were going to a town we knew nothing about, and I was taking my entire theater company, some of whom are gay, some of whom are straight, some of whom are Hispanic, you know, a very, very mixed group, to Laramie to conduct interviews. And so there was a little bit of trepidation about what we were going to find, about, you know, what we were doing going to this town that we knew so little about.
There were 10 trips to Laramie in all. The first one was the bulk of the company members went down for 10 days, right as the media was leaving Laramie. So the media descended, they were packing up and leaving, and then we arrived. and people still really needed to talk. So our timing was really perfect.
Well, it happened very organically. We went to Laramie as a company, and basically on the first day we sort of fanned out into the religious community and onto the university campus. And then from there we sort of just followed our own impulses. Lee and I worked together a lot and found that we were really interested in connecting with the gay community in town because we're both gay, and also with the religious organizations, particularly Father Roger Schmidt, who actually became a sort of mentor and spiritual guide for us through the process, because it was a very difficult process for us as gay people. It brought up a lot of intense feelings and a lot of fear and a lot of confusion and anxiety. And it was also, we were learning as we were going as artists as well. So it was a very chaotic and difficult process for us. And Father Roger, who was so committed to the gay community in Laramie and to the family of Matthew and to everybody really, was also very committed to us and inspired us and talked us through a lot of stuff. And some of that comes through in the play.
People were talking to the press, and then they had time to see how the press was representing them. So they had that feedback, and they were like, we don't like being called rednecks. We don't like being called cowboys. We don't like being characterized as homophobes. So there we were. We were just sort of a ragtag company. We had handheld tape recorders from Radio Shack. Like, we used to sit down and talk to us, and people were like, let me tell you a thing or two. And so they had this desire to set the record straight, and we were kind of the default listeners for that process within the community. So it wasn't that hard to get the interviews. You know, people really had a lot on their minds. They still needed to talk. They still needed to process things. And Moises was pretty brilliant about how he approached it. He just let all 10 of us just follow our own leads. So we didn't have any kind of organizational principles other than follow your own instincts, follow your own leads. So one of our colleagues, Stephen Belber, he wanted to get to know the families of the perpetrators and the friends of the perpetrators. Greg and I really wanted to know about the gay community in Laramie. Then we also reached out to the religious community. So everybody kind of spanned out across the town, and that's how we got such a diverse range of interviewees. But when Greg and I went to see Father Roger, he was a Catholic priest in town at the Newman Center on campus, and we kind of had a lot of preconceived notions. I was raised Catholic. The Catholic Church is pretty notoriously homophobic. We had a lot of preconceived notions of how that interview was going to go, and Father Roger was one of the warmest, most receptive people of anybody we talked to, and he took us in and acknowledged how difficult it is to be a gay person in society, especially as a young gay person, as Matthew was. And of course, Greg and I both identified with that struggle of coming out and, you know, being gay in a place where there aren't a lot of gay people. And having that connection with a Catholic priest was so unexpected, to have him kind of look me in the eyes and say, you know, you've been oppressed. It really shook the ground under us.
I did have an interview with one particularly homophobic guy, and my job really was to get his point of view and hear how he felt about the experience rather than get into a political debate. So even that interview was actually quite interesting to me, because normally where I would jump in and sort of cut somebody off and get really indignant, I actually had an opportunity to kind of listen to and understand this person. So it was very important experiences for me.
I think what people were struck by was that we didn't just want to talk about the incident. We really wanted to know about their lives and about the culture in Laramie. We really wanted to know the history of the place. We wanted to have a broader understanding of what happened.
The first time I went to Laramie was for the year anniversary.
Kelly Simpkins, actor, Tectonic Theater Company.
And obviously several of our company members had already been to do some interviews, so I was kind of excited to go and very nervous to go. I was a little trepidatious just to kind of be in that town. And, you know, obviously we had made some contact with people who had been very kind. And so I knew that there was that energy that was in Laramie, certainly after the media had descended and really, you know, took sound bites from them and obviously kind of shook that community up in a lot of ways. So I certainly didn't expect a lot of animosity, but I just didn't know personally what to expect. I mean, we got to go to the fence, and that was obviously extremely emotional, and they had several vigils and a concert where we met Judy and Dennis. It was just a really big emotional trip for me.
The play itself was organized around the idea of what happened to the town in the face of this tragedy. So we really followed different townspeople through what happened.
Father Roger actually said to me and Lee in one of the interviews that we did, he said, you tell it right, you tell it correct.
The idea wasn't, let's go to Laramie and make a play. That was not the question. It was, do we as theater artists have a role to play in the conversation that's happening here? So when we left, the answer was yes, because we were part of the conversation. People were really confiding in us. They were telling us all kinds of things. We were making connections in the community. So in that respect, the experiment was a success because we had gotten people to talk to us. We didn't know when we were leaving what would actually become of it. We transcribed every word that everyone said, and we work collaboratively as a group. So my title was head writer, and Moises was the playwright. But everybody works as a dramaturg in our company, so everybody has a say. So we would take the raw material, and we would sit in a room together, and we just started sharing the material. And what immediately started to happen was that the actors just unconsciously started to portray the characters. So they started using the accents and the mannerisms, and they started using hats and different things, and they started to become these characters. So it was really the process of letting the characters come to life, number one, and letting the characters begin to speak. So it was really about the writing team kind of taking all of the moments that the actors created and creating a structure for it. And so it wasn't until much later when we started to craft the material as a group that we started to see the play emerge from the material.
We would do an interview, a series of interviews, and we would come back. So we were always working between our trips because we were watching the entire development of Laramie over the course of the year and a half from Matthew's death until the final death penalty trial. So it was a long process, and we went as a company and as individuals very up and down in terms of, like, we're never going to get this thing finished.
We were all playing several characters, and we had to make specific choices about how we were going to physically and vocally differentiate them. So, yeah, I did really, you know, kind of take mental notes and kind of wrote some stuff down during the interview. But again, the way Tectonic works is this kind of Brechtian idea of the actor is present and the character is present. So the form of Laramie is essentially a group of actors coming out and saying to the audience, we went to Laramie and this is what we saw, so that the audience is never believing that we are going to transform realistically into that character. So, you know, at some point, Moises and Lee had to tell me to stop listening to the tapes because I was trying too hard to be that person. And I could never be that person because I'm not that person. So I really kind of had to put the tapes away and just trust that I was showing what my experience of Romaine was, what I remember about how she, you know, stood and walked and, you know, the way she kind of held herself physically and posture and her vocal quality. But it was more, you know, we talked a lot about the word essence. So it was more of an essence, I think, of Romaine that I was going for after I was kind of listening to the tapes too much and trying to become those people.
After over a year of work, the Tectonic Theater Company started putting finishing touches on their project. The next question would be, where would it premiere?
When we first did it in Denver, the closest regional theater to Laramie. And to me, that was very important in terms of the theater. And the fact that Donovan Marley, who was the artistic director at the time, stood up and said, well, we're the regional theater who's going to do this because this happened in our community. So that, to me, speaks volumes about the power of what theater can do in community. So we were only thinking about Denver. We weren't thinking about beyond Denver. And we had, you know, only two acts. The play ended up being a three-act play. It was very long. Everybody was very tired. People were kind of agonizing over what to keep in, what to keep out. People were fighting for things. Romaine actually was a character who I worked very hard on, crafting her material in particular, and fighting to get her voice in the play because there were so many voices and everybody wanted their characters and everybody wanted this person and that person. So it was constantly advocating for the voices that you wanted. So in the 11th hour there, the play was way too long. We were in previews. It was about to open in a few days. And we realized we had to cut some people out of the play. And that was a very agonizing decision. But Moises came up with a kind of a genius solution because he said, okay, the play is too long. And if you don't want your characters cut, go home and edit your own text. So everybody went home and they streamlined their text and they cut it down, you know, to size so that we were able to keep the majority of the voices in the play. So it was a collaborative process right up until the end.
I mean, we didn't have a third act when we went to Denver. We had acts one and two, and we essentially didn't know if we were going to have a third act, whether we could get that up and running, and we did, thankfully. So I think there was just a lot of, you know, there were several people from Laramie who were going to be there. There was a lot of press that was going to be there. It was a really big event, so I was really, really nervous, and excited and, you know, really had a lot of anticipation about what people were going to think about this play that we had all so lovingly put so much time and effort and, you know, our own selves and did the research. And we all had so much kind of big heart about this experience that it was really a beautiful experience to share with them, and especially in that part of the world.
And how would the town of Laramie react to seeing a play of itself?
We took it back to Laramie after we were off Broadway. There's just something about people living in that western part that really understand this play in a way that no other community really does, because they understand the land, they understand, you know, those kinds of small town values in a way that doing it in New York or doing it in California doesn't really get. They don't get all the kind of humor about the land and people talking about what it's like to live in the West and have horses and have ranches and be farmers and all of that stuff. So it was a fantastic opening night.
In the scene where Ruland Stacey actually announces worldwide television that Matthew has actually died, and he has a small breakdown, like very small, just cries a little bit. In that moment when I was playing that role and saying those words, it was unbelievable the sound that was coming out of these young people who were watching the play. They were wailing with grief. And I've never really experienced the potency of theater and what it could actually do until that day. It was like Greek theater. It was like a community of people grieving their shared experience. It was so incredibly powerful, and I felt so privileged to be able to be there and to go through that with them. And I was wailing too. I mean, it was this tiny little tearful moment, and I could not keep it together. But it was really, really profound for me.
When the whole company went to Laramie, that was, I think, just the pinnacle of the whole experience, because we were utterly terrified. Here we were in Laramie performing the Laramie Project to the people we spoke to. And in that audience, you could have heard a pin drop. Moises and I were sitting together, and he was kind of like clutching my arm. And then as soon as there was a laugh, like the first line, Eileen Engen says something about the cattle or something, and the whole audience laughed. And it was like, oh, okay, it's going to be okay. They're going to be able to see themselves as characters now. They're going to be able to watch this experience as a play. It's not going to be them. It's going to be a representation of them. And that was a pretty amazing experience, because in the play, the actors introduce the characters. So they say, Doc O'Connor, and then Doc O'Connor says a line. Well, in Laramie, everybody knew who that person was before they even speak. So when they say, Doc O'Connor, people started laughing. So there was this incredible way in which the actors and the audience became one. And we were all just in the same room together talking. And that was, you know, a life-changing experience to see that theater could speak in that way in a community.
The Laramie Project has served as an inspiration to audiences around the world. Audience members can't help but leave the show ready to make the world a better and safer place for all people. The end result is people getting involved in their communities and the lives of the people around them. Their actions serve as a lasting testimony to the Laramie Project's significance.
I was so overwhelmed by the experience of watching the Laramie Project that I actually had to go back the next week and see it again.
Dean Walton, nonprofit founder and director of a New Jersey community theater production of the Laramie Project.
I just couldn't process everything at once. It just hit me so very hard. And immediately after seeing it, I got on the internet and started doing as much research as I possibly could. And one of the things that I found, which was sort of a repeated theme over and over again, was that while a lot of money had been raised in Matthew's name for some very good causes, none of that money appeared to have stayed in Laramie or in Wyoming to help other kids. And I figured, well, in the situation as it appeared to be, there certainly had to be more Matthews out there that were sort of struggling with identity and struggling with looking for something positive with which to identify. So my mother had died the previous year, as she had left me an inheritance, and I wanted to do something positive with that money. So in my internet research, I found a book called Losing Matt Shepard by Beth LaFreda, and it gave me a lot more information about Laramie and about what had happened in the aftermath of Matthew's death. And the internet being the wonderful thing that it is, I was able to come up with an email address for Beth LaFreda, and I contacted her and said, you know, what can I do? And she happened to mention that at the University of Wyoming, there was a new office called the Rainbow Resource Center, which was essentially an empty office. It had a rainbow, but no resources. So at first I thought, well, maybe I'll fund a scholarship or something in Matthew's name. But it seemed to me that filling this Rainbow Resource Center might be a good use for this money. So that's what I did. I donated about 400 to 500 volumes of lesbian and gay books. I ordered them periodical subscriptions, DVDs, things like that, and we filled it. Filled it up. It really was a good feeling, and it taught me a lot. So I said to myself, you know, the inheritance was great, and I pretty much used it up to fund this project, but I wanted to do more. And I've been involved in community theater for about 25 years. So I brought my friends together and thought, what can we do to raise more money? I don't bake, and I don't wash my own car, so I sure as hell am not going to wash yours. But we are entertainers, my friends and I. So we got together and put on a show. We just kind of did a cabaret performance. And the first year we did that, we raised about $5,000. And we decided we wanted that to continue. So a core group of us, myself heading it up, founded the Rainbow Connection Network. And I happen to have a friend who was a lawyer, and he donated his time in getting the paperwork together. And I have a friend who writes press releases, so she donated her time with that. And one of my friends works at a bank, so she became the treasurer. And that's pretty much how it happened, just kind of saying, we want to do more. What can we do? And we just got together and did it. We look for creative ways to assure that lesbian and gay youth feel supported, that they feel like there's a positive place for them somewhere, whether it's a school group, a school office, whether it's a book, whether it's just the idea that they know it's there is a huge turning point in their life.
Emily Landon, actor, University of Wisconsin, Manitowoc.
We actually had a talk back with people who came and anyone in the community who had questions, who had concerns about putting on such a show in such a small city. And it was very positive feedback. We had people saying that this was one of the most powerful shows that this company has ever done, and it really related a wonderful message.
Kirsten Walsh, actor and stage crew, University of North Florida.
I put together a soundtrack first, and then we decided, since it was a college production, that we didn't want to go with just your standard music. And I was a music major at University of North Florida. I've since graduated. But I put together a small little band, and we played some original music and some more abstract avant-garde percussion music. And we had just our small band, and we added that in throughout the show. And I mean, it's a play that doesn't have a lot of music cues in it. So it was a very interesting experience trying to find songs that would fit that style. And it was a lot of fun to do.
For the Laramie Project, we dedicated an entire day.
Jackie Martino, director, King and Low Haywood Thomas High School.
We had a short teaser of the play in the morning, and then Romaine came to speak to the school for about an hour and a half or so. And then after that, the whole school broke up into groups of like 20 and 25, and Romaine actually participated in one of those groups. And we did some community building exercises that were led by the students, and it was a way of showing how we're more alike than different, and how just to accept people for who they are. And we didn't want to get into really heavy conversation at that point, because the morning had been kind of intense. And then we also had the debate team presented on both sides of same-sex marriage. In the afternoon, we had an open mic forum where students had the opportunity to just stand up and say what they thought about the day so far. And it was a powerful day. And I would say that when Romaine spoke, she was the only one in my time that's ever received a standing ovation from the students.
Well, our director actually approached me in the beginning of the process and said that she wanted to have a short piece done on the process of making the Laramie Project.
Noah Fute, documentary short filmmaker and actor at King and Low Haywood Thomas High School.
So we kind of brainstormed, and as opposed to doing kind of the more standard documentary that's associated with a show like this, we decided we would do a lot of what the cast thought about the show, because one of the things that we wanted to focus on during the Laramie Project Day was dialogue. So we felt that maybe people in the audience would more of a connection to the events if they heard the opinion of the cast members who'd actually know about the incident, rather than try and introduce them to what happened to Matt through news clips or something like that. It was mostly interview-based. I interviewed all the principal cast members and most of the secondary cast members as well. And of course, we had interviews with our director. And other than that, we had some behind-the-scenes footage from what we call Tech Week, which is, it's 7 days where we have to make sure that the show is ready to go. So it's an opportunity for the viewer to see the cast gelling together and making sure that we all have costumes right and we've got all our lines down and all the staging is correct. So it can be hectic, but it's also one of those times where you can really see the show coming together and the cast members, you know, really starting to click.
We did the chalk walk for peace at my
High School, where we raised over $600 for the Matthew Shepard Foundation.
Tanya Wheelock, actor, County College of Morris.
That's something that we saw on YouTube. We saw that one school had done it, so me and one of my good friends decided that we wanted to do the same thing. A lot of people participated, and it was really surprising to see how many people wrote really nice messages of just love and hope. At Curtain Call for every show, we made an announcement that we would be collecting in the lobby for the Matthew Shepard Foundation. I was so inspired by being part of the performance.
Actor Kirsten Walsh, Jacksonville, Florida.
And working on the Laramie Project, that I actually called Romaine and brought her to Jacksonville, Florida to speak about gay rights and about Matthew and about, you know, her life and her experiences. The play had that much of an impact on me to bring her here to speak to other people about, you know, herself and everything. And I think that's my favorite experience about working with the play itself.
Gary Lee Posey, director, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Oxford, Mississippi.
I had written a play that dealt with the same thing since I knew Matthew Shepard when we were students together at Catawba College in North Carolina, and he was a pretty good friend of mine, and I directed him in a couple of things in the theater department. And so when I heard about the murder, I was in Orlando, and for like the next year or so, I started writing a play just sort of to for therapy for myself. And so we did a staged reading of my play in 2001, almost a year to the day before I did the first production of Laramie Project. And one of the people who saw the production said, "You know that there's a play called The Laramie Project?" And I said, "Yes, yes, I know." And I wrote mine before that. I knew that. I wasn't writing it in response to that. So then I thought, well, let me just see what it is. And so after I had gotten through the process of my play, then I bought Laramie Project as the script. And I read through it and I thought, wow, this is pretty powerful stuff. And so I guess to show that there was no bad blood between my script and this one, I set out to do it, and it was quite a rewarding experience.
We wrote our own show, which was a series of vignettes all based on tolerance.
Actor Tanya Wheelock, Randolph, New Jersey.
We wanted to have the spirit of the Laramie Project in it, and we thought that the Laramie Project was really something about tolerance and acceptance. So we decided to keep that theme and wrote a series of scenes. One was based on McCarthyism and communism trials in America.
You're listening to 10 Years Later, The Laramie Project, The Lasting Legacy of Matthew Shepard, presented by The Derek and Romaine Show on OutQ. To make a donation to the Matthew Shepard Foundation, please visit www.matthewshepard.org.